Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, we talk about things like project-based learning or design thinking, different ways that we can empower our students with voice and choice. I share strategies and tools and protocols that you can use. I share stories of things that worked, some of those big epic mistakes as well. And lately I've been doing a lot of interviews with experts as well. And it's because ultimately I really believe that teachers are the greatest factor in terms of helping students develop those critical lifelong soft skills. Today we're going to be talking about project-based learning and this idea that every student deserves access to PBL. And I truly believe in this idea of PBL for all. And so I want to tell you a story about a good friend of mine. My friend Chad, he passed away last year tragically from cancer last spring, and he was a good friend of mine. He was my tech director at our school district, but really he was a good friend. We used to hang out every Thursday night, him and our friend Javi, and he was an innovator. He was a creative thinker. He was kind and joyous and empathetic, and he eventually left the job as a tech director to become a building level principal, and he was an amazing principal as well. But my friend Chad started this thing called the 21st Classroom Initiative in our school district. And teachers would be part of a six-person team, each group of teachers. And they would attend professional development, receive state-of-the-art technology, and have a learning coach who would help them implement student-centered learning. Now, this was a really cool process, and teachers had to apply to be a part of these teams. But here's the catch. This wasn't the gifted cluster. This wasn't the honors, you know, group. This initiative was only available for teachers who taught ELL classes. We focused our professional development on how to integrate language acquisition strategies into project-based learning and into writers' workshops, inquiry-based learning, and other student-centered approaches to learning. Meanwhile, Javi, who I worked with, and Sarah, Dr. Martinez, Sarah Martinez is a fantastic leader and thinker, they led this initiative to redesign what had really been a rote-based, skills-based, to be honest, boring kind of summer school, into a creativity-infused summer STEM camp. And again, it was centered on this idea of project-based learning. Now, our philosophy was simple. ELL students deserve access to the same epic student-centered projects that gifted kids were already doing. Now, soon, another colleague, Jennifer, led the way with special education, showing how we could blend universal design with things like student blogging and podcasting and other project-based learning experiences. This 21st century learning initiative was a hub in an unlikely space with an unlikely group of students. Our ELL students and our exceptional learners were getting a chance to have voice and choice in their learning. And yet, I gotta say, this approach, this initiative, this focus on exceptional learners and ELL students for PBL, well, it's not really the norm. In our school district, it was more common for gifted students to use technology for PBL and inquiry-based learning. They use their devices to connect to authors via Skype and through experts with email. And meanwhile, many of our ELL and special education students used adaptive learning programs that delivered basically digital worksheets for reading intervention. And that was kind of it. They didn't really use much technology at all. And there was such a focus on discrete skills that they weren't getting a chance to do meaningful PBL. Now, as I work with pre-service teachers as a professor, I continue to see this trend. Low-income students, ELL students, exceptional learners, they're all less likely to experience student-centered projects, the kind that truly empower them with voice and choice. In some cases, this lack of access is due to an implicit bias. I've heard some teachers say things like, "I just don't think my ELL students are ready for project-based learning," or "my special education students are too low, they'll just get frustrated." Sometimes they referenced issues with classroom management, but often it's the idea that somehow projects are simply too advanced for some kinds of students. Now, this implicit bias reinforces this creative chasm. It's this belief that PBL is too far advanced for, you know, kids who are struggling with language or who are exceptional learners, that these students need to focus on the basics while the, quote, advanced students need to have more advanced types of pedagogy. Often there is a philosophy that basic academic skills have to be taught first and then the soft skills can happen later. Here, PBL is simply something you get to do after the real learning has happened. And I'll tell you what, 2 decades ago, Howard Gardner, who people love, wrote in The Disciplined Mind that progressive education, especially PBL, was not an ideal approach, quote, for disadvantaged children who do not acquire literacy in the dominant culture at home, unquote. For Gardner, quote, a prescribed curriculum helps to provide a level playing field to ensure that future citizens enjoy a common knowledge base, end quote. Now, I disagree. I really disagree. This reveals a deficit mindset about low-income students, right? That they don't come from a print-rich culture, therefore they just have to have a prescribed curriculum instead. And it assumes that they have no prior knowledge, no cultural assets that they can bring to the table. Meanwhile, we know that PBL can lead to moderate increases in academic achievement. And we also know that it leads to higher retention of the information. In other words, when students engage in PBL, they not only achieve better academically, they retain that knowledge for a longer amount of time. Meaningful projects can boost student engagement and increase student agency and self-direction. I would say that it's not just that, it helps them to develop all those critical soft skills that we got into last week when we talked about PBL and SEL. And yet, we see that there are often these fears that teachers experience when they want to implement project-based learning. You know, for me, when I think about all of the, you know, fears I had, I was worried that we couldn't predict where we were going. I was worried that PBL would take up too much time. It felt like a gamble. I worried that kids would stop working. I wouldn't be able to track how my students were doing. It might fail. It might get chaotic. It might get loud. All of these different fears that I had, those had kept me from doing PBL at the beginning of my first year of teaching, and they honestly held me back a lot in my first, I would say, 3 to 4 years of doing PBL as a teacher. But I would argue that PBL is vital for students who are learning a new language. I would argue that it's actually vital for exceptional learners. It's vital in low-income schools. Not only do they learn those critical academic skills, they also learn things like collaboration, communication, curation, problem-solving, project management, all of those skills that they will use for the rest of their life. So I want to talk about what it means to make PBL inclusive, and here are 5 different ideas. Number one, teach students to self-select scaffolds. Create tutorials and resources for all students and then allow them to determine when they need to use them by making things like sentence stems, anchor charts, and other resources available to all students. You reduce the stigma while teaching students how to self-manage and self-advocate. This might seem like you're lowering your standards by allowing every kid to have access to, you know, the scaffolds. But the reality is, what you're really aiming for is universal design. You're saying that if there are things that could help one student, they could probably help all students. Now, for some kids, it's not going to be something that they're going to need. You know, there are some students who they're going to be held back if you give them sentence stems. They don't need sentence stems. They may not need the front-loaded vocabulary. So what you're doing then is you are giving them access to vocabulary words, to visuals, to graphic organizers, to sentence stems, and then you're telling students, be a self-advocate and use those scaffolds when you need them. You teach them how to access the scaffolds. And what you're doing is you're honoring their autonomy and agency as learners. So that's the first idea. Teach students to self-select scaffolds. Idea number two, pull small groups. Although it's helpful to make scaffolding available to all students, you might still need to help a certain group of students with key discrete skills. For example, when we were doing our tiny house projects, I pulled small groups for intervention in proportional reasoning and in volume and surface area. This allowed them to practice those key skills within the projects. Similarly, when students struggled with research, I pulled small groups to help them identify sources, make inferences, summarize information, you know, finding facts, all of those key discrete skills that they needed some additional help with. However, the need for additional help did not negate the need for meaningful projects. They still worked on the projects. I was just providing additional help with small groups while the rest of the class continued to do research on their own. I actually found it easier for me to pull small groups within a whole class PBL project than I did during a traditional, you know, unit plan. Because with PBL, students were often working independently, which made it way easier to pull those small groups. Idea number three, build interdependency into the projects. Now, I've talked about this a lot on this podcast. You've heard it before, over and over again. It's a broken record with me. It's the idea that students have an independent voice in what they're doing, but they also have to depend on others for learning. There are things like the brainstorming process where they brainstorm first. They then share their ideas with a group, negotiate ideas together, depend on each other, and collectively come up with their concepts. And that's just one idea. There's the process for research. There's structures that you can use for peer feedback. All of these different ideas fit into that notion of idea number three, which is to build interdependency into your projects. If you want to learn more about interdependence in projects, check out the podcast and blog post that was all about how to make, how to take collaboration to the next level in small group projects. And I really do a deep dive into this idea of structures for interdependence. But the fourth idea is to honor each student's expertise. In the startup world, they often talk about your quote unfair advantage. It's your hidden genius that might seem easy to you, but is hard for everyone else. I think the same is true for us in creative work. My unfair advantage is that I am a super fast reader and I easily connect ideas from multiple sources. Although I still sometimes feel insecure about my ability to draw, I could suppose maybe another unfair advantage is that I like to draw. And so I have doodles and visuals when I speak, when I blog, when I teach. By contrast, my friend AJ is an amazing systems thinker, and his unfair advantage is his ability to navigate complex systems easily while being at the same time deeply empathetic toward people. And I think we all have these unfair advantages. Students bring their unfair advantages to the classroom as well. However, it's easy for teachers to miss some of these hidden talents with students who are either exceptional learners or who are ELL students. Too often in school, we focus on what students can't do, and we miss out on what they can do. I remember an ELL student I had who was shy and quiet, but could solve complex problems easily. Because of her language status, we almost missed her hidden genius. It took this one teacher, Nancy, to recommend her for gifted testing, and she was off the charts in terms of logical reasoning. Another time I had a student who struggled with blogging and podcasting. But then when we did our Geek Out blogs, he began to share how much he knew about video games, and he began to shine as a student. My point is that we can tap into these ideas of honoring their expertise. In some cases, what they know about is cultural, their cultural aspects or their native language. It could be hobbies that they have. It could be aspects of the community that they know about that you don't. All of that is their hidden genius. It all encompasses the larger set of prior knowledge that they have. And I would argue that the more we can honor their expertise, the more they will be affirmed, the more they will build on that prior knowledge to apply new knowledge. And more importantly, the more willing they will be to take those key creative risks that they need to take amid projects. So I think it's really important that we honor their expertise. And then the fifth idea is to partner with ELL and special education teachers. I think it's important that we, if you are not an ELL teacher, if you are not a special education teacher, you find those experts in your building and you partner with them. You ask about those accommodations. So when I think about ELL, it might be front-loading vocabulary, more think time, translations, partnering them with someone who's multilingual, incorporating resources in their first language, leveled sentence stems that they can use, mini lessons on things like verb tense structures. A lot of times grammar is sort of an overlooked area that can be really helpful for students who are ELL students. Uses of visuals, technology tools. I love doing pre-recorded direct instruction that they can slow down to a 0.5 or 0.25, or they could rewind and watch again. It's little things like paying attention to students' affective filters and finding ways to reduce fear and anxiety, which again is part of why we want to tap into their prior knowledge. Using structured listening and discussions within the project, including sample questions, scripts, sentence stems. For special education students, it might be, you know, specific accommodations they have on their IEPs. It might be things from their 504 plans. But it's also having additional handouts, doing graphic organizers, pulling small groups, differentiating the tasks within the group so that each student can participate, providing necessary assistive technology, teaching special education students how to access, you know, tutorials and tools and anchor charts and those accommodations, and, you know, really teaching them how to be self-advocates, being flexible with deadlines and requirements around specific tasks. It can involve, you know, explicitly teaching how to engage in task analysis and project management. And that helps for exceptional learners who struggle with executive function. Ultimately, every student deserves access to meaningful PBL. However, it takes time and intentionality to make a PBL classroom truly inclusive. This is why it helps to partner with fellow teachers and collaborate on the unit planning process. Now, it will never be perfect. There will always be room to grow and improve. But when we embody the idea of PBL for all, we create a more inclusive PBL environment. And by empowering all students in the present, we are preparing all students for a lifetime of learning. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, would you leave a review on iTunes, or I guess not iTunes, it's Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, I just want to point out, I have launched a PBL mini course. It is a 5-lesson introduction to project-based learning course. I also have an updated version that I just did of the PBL master course. So you can check those out as well. They're reduced price right now, so go check them out. But again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.